The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. As always, you can find all of our podcasts on loosecannons.net and iTunes.application of iTunes, the iTunes app
store,
whatever thing you use iTunes on.
Just look up Loose Cannons on the iTunes store and find that garish purple logo.
We also have other stuff besides our podcasts on loosecannons.net, such as carefully curated screen grabs from the movies that are on the podcast. Brought to you by Basil.
We sure do.
Super good.
We have some writings, and we have a video, and also, more videos coming. And
videos.
We have discussion now, so if you post a comment on loosecannons.net, one of us will find it eventually, and it will be like engaging with a real life celebrity.
Yep. Until then, we'll just keep engaging ourselves.
We love to engage ourselves. Today we're discussing 2008's Tokyo Sonata, directed by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. But before we do that, let's do this. Heralds and announcements!
Wow, that was almost planned.
It's funny because last week, our last release, we retroactively created this segment in the 3 Days of the Condor podcast that we recorded last year.
Yeah, that's
year.
The first one where we call it Heralds and Announcements.
Yes.
Even though we've been doing it now for weeks, we just released the one where we first called it that, and we did the horn thing. That's why Patrick and I did it this time. Because
let's stick with the horn thing. I like it.
Yep. I like the horn
Patrick.
Thing, too. My herald this week is Breaking News by Johnny Toe. I believe it's from 2004. This is it's a movie that has kind of a similar plot to The Raid, although without all of the like gross human destruction. It's actually more about the media coverage of the event and the way that it's manipulated by the police and by the people who are holding the hostages as well. And I just thought it was very funny and very well-paced, and I thought it managed to humanize all of the characters involved, which I almost never see done in action movies like this, especially as opposed to something like The Raid, where almost nobody is humanized, and it's just about death and destruction, and this is more about, you know, who those people are and how they're all affected by the event. So I enjoyed it. Thumbs up. Great job, Johnny Toe. It's 2 for 2 right now.
Best director ever.
No, that's Kenneth Loner again.
That's right.
Because he's made 2 great films and he has not made any other ones.
Yep.
I am going to denounce a Japanese movie called Golden Eyes that I watched yesterday. Which is basically a pretty cheap James Bond ripoff, but not in a very fun way. It's mostly, like, it seems like they didn't have very much budget, and so they had to pad out the runtime, so almost all the transitions between locations and stuff like that are handled by just really extreme long shots of cars driving really boringly for, you know, like 30 seconds to a minute, and then they get to the new place, and then there's like more scenes. But The movie's only an hour and 19 minutes, so it seems like they just had to pad it out to get it to a full, like, feature Japanese length, but otherwise the movie maybe would have been, like, an hour and 5 minutes, so they had to cram in this, like, 15 minutes of really boring transitionary stuff. And the movie opens with a thing that I feel like the director really pitched and thought it was really good, but then they got the money together and realized it wasn't going to work, but there was no way to undo it at that point. Like, they already had everything, which is, like, a guy's running away from a helicopter, and the helicopter drops this giant, spike chain thing and, like, rams it into his back and picks him up and flies away, but it's really just, like, horrible looking because the helicopter is coming really slow and the thing is, like, not very intimidating, and if he just laid down it would miss him entirely, so it only really gets him because he manages to, like, run into a, like, he's running on the beach and he runs into a sand wall and just, like, presses himself up against the sand wall so that the helicopter can spike him and then fly him away. It's really... And I was like, oh, this is going to be a bad movie. And then I watched the rest of the movie, and it was very bad. So it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Also, every time it seemed like it was going to end, like, 5 more minutes got tacked on. And the very last shot is just the outside of a plane when a guy is flying away. Like, it just, like, shows, like, the Pan Am logo and a plane taking off. And I'm like, is there going to be more scenes? And then it just shows, like, the outside of the plane wing, like, looking out the window, and then the end. And I was like, why did you show them? Like, we don't know where he's flying to. Like, it's not... He's just flying out of the movie, I guess.
He's flying to not watch this movie. He's like, get me out of here. Ilya?
I'm going to denounce my big fat Greek wedding.
Oh.
I know, very controversial of me to denounce that. Me and Carl have been watching a bunch of romantic comedies and stuff, and we watched that one just before she left. And that was really bad. It was like, it really reminded me of Moonstruck, actually, because it has all the terrible stereotype stuff from Moonstruck. And it has none of the all good stuff from Moonstruck. So it's just like everything you hated about Moonstruck, you just get in spades here. And I think I mentioned I really like Moonstruck, so I kind of like the stereotypical stuff didn't bother me as much. Here it was like front and center. Every single thing having to do with the characters was based on like some really hackneyed idea of, oh, how goofy are these Greeks that are like in the U.S. and they have a Parthenon-looking house and they throw these crazy parties and they dance a lot and they eat only meat and blah blah blah. It's like it's just so, I don't know. Like, I thought it was awful, even though like it's really like hating the movie seems weird because it's so like it's so not even trying to be anything. Like, it's not even offensive because it's so such a nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to get offended at something that's so empty and is literally just nothing, but I still did manage to. And yeah, so yeah,
that's sorry. At least Kenan's promise. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry,
we
Carl,
hate all your vanilla movies, we hate them.
I want to apologize to Carla retroactively for kind of being really angry while we were watching it and kind of spoiling our evening. But oh well, happens every now and again.
That's a movie that movie theaters really loved, because if you didn't know this, movie theaters get more revenue. They get a higher percentage of the revenue the longer the movie is in the theater. Like, they get the least amount the first couple of weekends. Mm-hmm. And if it lasts for a really long time. And for some reason, My Big Fat Greek Wedding was, like, a minor hit and then somehow picked up, like, 6 months after it came out. And sort of, like, then the movie theaters were just making all of the money. And the people who made the movie were making, like, none of it. Because it made, like, so much of its money after, like, what would normally be considered its first run. but then it just like stayed at the first one. It just like stayed in the top five for like months and months.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember like, it was the same here. Like it was showing that movie a year later or something. And it's like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
The theaters loved it. They would have showed it forever if they could.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to herald a very underseen, underappreciated film called Aguirre, the Wrath of God.
Wow.
A movie that no one...
getting some love on Loose Cannons.
The movie that no one has heard of or seen or critically appreciated. I don't have too much to say about it because most of the things that I would say about it you've probably heard before, like Klaus Kinski's performance is pretty incredible, and it's really uncomfortable to watch, and there's a sort of immediacy to Herzog's filming that really makes me feel like I'm in the jungle with these people and that I'm also losing my mind like they are while I'm watching it. But I think if I thought about it like a lot, I would probably be bothered by some exploitative qualities of Herzog's filmmaking style and stuff like that. But it was hard. I think it's a compliment to this movie that I didn't, you know, start immediately doing that when I was watching it, that I just feel sort of so in it and feel so like taken away that that I don't do that sort of process that I normally do. Yeah, it's a pretty impressive film.
Yeah, and monkeys.
As most people do.
Lots of monkeys.
Yeah.
Boat full of monkeys.
Man, I always forget how long it takes for him to pick up the monkey. I always think it's like the monkeys appear and then he picks up the monkey. But no, it's like 4 minutes of him just walking around after the monkey slowly until he finally picks one up.
Yeah, that scene takes a long time. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I haven't watched that movie in a while. This makes me curious to
me
watch
either.
It again.
I watched it freshman year of college, so that was 12 years ago.
Yeah. I think the first time I saw it was like 2008 or 2009, and then I think I watched it a few months after that too. So I've seen it twice, but both times a while back.
Hmm.
I also watched it my freshman year of college, but that was only 5 years ago.
I could have watched it again for this go-around of freshman year of college. That would have been 2 years ago.
Yep.
2.5 years ago. So today, as I said, we're going to be discussing Tokyo Sonata, which is a family drama. The main character is Ryuhei and his wife Megumi, and then he has Megumi, and then he has two kids, Kenji, and what was the other kid's name?
Takashi.
Yeah.
Takashi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And basically, like, the main plot is that he loses his job at the beginning of the movie. Although that's a little confusing, it seems like they offered him a worse job and he wasn't willing to take it. So then sort of the tenuous relationships of the family start to unravel at that point. They all kind of have their own storyline. Ryuhei meets a guy who's also unemployed but has gotten really good at being unemployed because he's been unemployed for like 3 weeks, and there's like a side story with him. And then Kenji wants to take piano, and Ryuhei's not willing to admit that they don't have the money to pay for piano lessons, because that would mean admitting that he's unemployed to his family, which he doesn't want to do. So he instead yells at Kenji for having the idea, and then their older son, Takashi, decides that he wants to join the American military, and, you know, Megumi is sort of trying to keep everything somewhat normal in the house and not really doing that great a job despite putting a lot of effort into it. And there's some other stuff at the end, but I guess we'll get into that as we go. That's the basic plot though.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick?
I am I guess I'm slightly on the side of disliking this movie. There were a lot of elements in it that bothered me just in sort of a general storytelling way, where I don't know if this is just like me being an American and not understanding the way that Japanese culture works, but I just don't understand why the dad like doesn't tell them that he's lost his job. Like, it seems like it would be such a simple fix for everything that happens in the movie if he was just like, oh, I lost my job, we can't afford this stuff, we gotta, you know, I'm gonna get another job, but we're not gonna make as much money, and like everything would be fixed. And it just I don't know, it feels like one of those like screenwriter tropes where it's like, oh, we gotta keep the drama going, so we gotta keep him from telling people really pertinent information.
What about in the OC?
Yeah, no, like that same thing happens sometimes in the OC, and those are some of my least favorite episodes. But I don't know, that stuff always really bothers me, and so I guess like overall the movie started to bother me too, because it, I was like, okay, I kind of know where it's going, and then it took like a really weird left turn, and I was like, did any of that actually happen, or was that in the mind of all the characters? It wasn't ever really clear, because there are some scenes that are like actual dream sequences, and then, but it doesn't really demarcate like, oh, that was a dream sequence. You're just like, oh, I guess that didn't really happen because that character is not here anymore. But I don't know, we can, you know, go on and continue talking about it. I was just...
Welcome to the world of Kiyoshi Kurosawa. Takes a weird left turn as a guaranteed part of Kiyoshi Kurosawa films. When I was watching this, I was almost surprised, because I was like, is this movie not going to take a weird left turn? But it did.
Yeah, imagine being
at
the...
longer than normal.
Like being at the crossroads and the sign saying... take a weird left turn or take an even weirder left turn.
Basil?
I like this movie. I would say in the beginning I really liked it a lot. There are a whole bunch of images that I thought were just super cool and, well, cool maybe not the right word, but sad in a really affecting visual way, which I think is hard for a lot of directors to accomplish. And also just noticed that I really like the way that Kiyoshi Kurosawa uses long takes. He uses them in ways that don't really call attention to themselves, so that they're sort of smoothly integrated with the rest of the diegesis and not really like showy. But when I do notice that there hasn't been a cut for a while, I'm like, oh shit, this is a really long take. All these people are doing stuff. And I mean, one of them is like when Ryue, pretty late, is yelling at Kenji when they find out that he's been taking piano lessons on the sly or whatever, and there's a whole scene of him like yelling at him and then like slapping him and all this stuff that goes on for a really long time, and as far as I can remember there's no cutting during that, and it makes it even more intense because it's sort of the camera's just passively observing from a medium distance or whatever.
Yeah, I like to underline all of that. I really loved the beginning of this movie. I really like this movie overall. I think I just really like Kiyoshi Kurosawa a lot. Like, he's great. I love some of the framing that goes on in this movie, the way certain characters are obscured by objects like in front of them, the way that the frame is often cut off with things on the sides. Like, I know that Fassbinder liked doing that, and I think Kurosawa is really good at doing that. Like, and also like showing how the frame is compartmentalized, so there's always shelves and things in the middle of it or at the side, and like people's heads like slightly below the shelves, showing how basically everyone has to fit into this little neat box in Japanese society. And I don't know, like, and this stuff, like Basil said, it never really calls attention to itself. Unless you kind of are looking for it, and I feel like that's just major skill from a directorial standpoint. And also, I just really like the characters in this movie. I felt like both the kids were, like, Kenji was really well written. I felt like his interactions with some of the people in his life were well written. I really liked the wife as a character. I like the way the main dude is just, like, shown to be kind of an asshole, and it's I mean, Patrick's right, you could have also just, I guess, just, he could have also just said, well, I lost my job, but in a way you can say that society is making him not admit this, and in a way it's also him, because that's the kind of guy he is, and he's really proud and really weird, and like would rather put his family through hell than admit that he did something wrong. So yeah, I really like this movie a lot.
We've talked about it in the past, but there are a lot of Japanese movies about male vanity, so I'm willing to admit that there's a cultural difference there that we probably don't understand. I like this movie a lot. I started watching it, and actually I was paying like no attention to it for like the first 30 minutes, and I was like, this seems odd for me. That's not how I normally feel about Kiyoshi Kurosawa movies, so I put it to the side. And then started watching it the next day, and I liked it more. Although I still think the beginning is actually the weakest part. I like it much better as it goes along. But it's actually kind of a strange reason in terms of Kiyoshi Kurosawa's output for me to like it, which is that I really like the acting in this movie. Not that the acting is bad in his other movies, Koji Yokishu is always good, but I quite love the actress who played Megumi, specifically her eyes. Like, I was constantly just sort of entranced by everything that was going on in her eyes.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I think that actor who played Kenji was really good for a kid actor, too. Which
he's great.
He has a lot of stuff he has to do, and that's, I don't know. I feel like kid actors are almost always sort of overstating stuff, and there's a lot of things that he does that are pretty subtle that I was super into.
I really like the part where, so he's passing along a porn manga in class, and then he's the one who gets caught with it, and the teacher, you know, kind of berates him about it, and he says that he saw the teacher with a porn manga, and then everyone in the class, you know, kind of freaks out about that. And then I really like the next part where he apologizes to the teacher for embarrassing him, and I don't feel like I've seen a scene like that in any other movie. It's kind of like when a student one-ups a teacher, it's always like a proud moment. And like my experience as a child has always been like whenever I like showed that authority wasn't really authority, that it was just something that we gave them, it always made me feel kind of sad in a way that I wish that I could take back. And so I thought that was a nice moment in that movie.
Yeah, I agree. I wrote that down, and also like the way that scene resolves made me really sad, because I felt like the Kenji's apology is so genuine that he's like really trying to connect with the teacher, and the teacher like kind of brushes him off and is basically just like, how about you ignore me and I'll ignore you, and like I'm like, that's like, a horrible solution. Yeah,
that's like,
sad.
That's the best we can do, like, is ignore each other. Like, and honestly,
I'm going to be your teacher for the rest of the semester and
honestly,
ignore you.
Judging from how people treat each other in this movie, that's like the best you can hope for, is that they'll just ignore each other.
Yeah,
I also like the part with... Sorry, Patrick.
It's okay. No, I was just going to say that's the reiteration of the like male vanity thing, where it's like he's just too proud to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong. He's just like, let's ignore each other.
Yeah.
Forget it all happened.
I also really like the part with Kenji. Like the whole thing involving his piano playing is obviously kind of like, I guess you could call that in a way like a typical screenwriter thing. Or like you could probably think that it will end with him playing the piano and being like really good about it. But what I liked was the way that his relationship with his piano teacher, like when he first sees her teaching this young kid, it's like, okay, so is he gonna like fall in love with this young girl that's also learning the piano? It's like, no, okay, so he wants to really learn the piano, I guess. Okay, and then he's like kind of concerned about the teacher who has her own thing going on. And then she's like really supportive of him. And it's like this really cool kind of story that, I mean, obviously it's heightened in a way, but also felt like none of that story felt like really super fake to me. It felt like, everything that happens within there. Like, okay, he's a prodigy. That's a little bit much, probably. But otherwise, that whole story is, like, really good. And, again, just underlines how the characters are, like, especially Kenji's, like, really rooted in something real.
I think I would have been more bothered by the prodigy thing if it were not for the ending, which is so weird and uncomfortable when he plays the song and you're like, wow, this kid is actually, like, super good at playing piano. And then it's just silent and it's like, wait, aren't they going to applaud? Like, isn't that what you do after you hear a good piece of music? And then it's just like they walk up and they walk out the door or something. And I'm like, man, that was so... It was like the him being a prodigy or something was supposed to be like a way out, I guess, for them. Mm-hmm. And then it's like not... First, they can't accept it. And then it's still like, I don't know, it's still like sad in a weird way.
Yeah, I think that part of that is just the formality of the thing, because the person who plays before him, they didn't clap either, but
yeah.
I was still just like, this is very strange, and that, like, during the credits, there's still sound going on, but it's just them cleaning up the place and, like, putting the piano bench thing down and everything, and I was like, oh, that's... I like, watched the whole credits, which I don't often do, because I was like, oh, is there going to be something afterwards? There's all this sound still going on, but then that's it. It's just... the end of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that kind of calls back the thing where so the other guy who Ruben mentioned, who's really good at being unemployed, when he
Casuzo.
Yes, when he commits suicide, apparently double suicide with his wife through gas poisoning, you don't see any of it except for the maid, I guess, who's also like just cleaning up after them. Like, that's the only thing...
And the
thing,
little girl.
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing you can do in the face of something that's, like, unspeakable is just clean up afterwards. But that's the only thing you can do.
And ignore it.
I don't know. That part also made me... I was like, wow, this got really dark all of a sudden. Because it hadn't been, like, super dark beforehand. It was just kind of like... I don't know. It was almost whimsical in a way. The stuff kept happening. Because, I mean, they would do those goofy shots where he goes into, like, an interview for a job, and they're like, sing karaoke. This is the only thing you know how to do. And then they just, like...
Oh, man.
He starts...
There were parts that I laughed at, but I did not laugh at that part. That part made me so sad.
He starts to sing, then they just cut to him just, like, smashing things because he's, like, you know, lost the job.
I did laugh at that part. I did laugh at the cut. Even though it was obvious, I thought that cut was great.
I thought the timing
of it was
super
good.
I was like, that's almost a Whedon cut right there. It's, but then it goes to like, oh, he's basically committed murder at that point. Like it's you could almost say it's a murder.
Not basically.
Suicide. Well,
it
I mean,
is a murder suicide.
The maid says, you know, he pressured her into it or whatever, and I was like, good lord, that's dark. Yep. And I was like, I don't know. I guess I felt weird because usually stuff like that is like, that's the catalyst for change in somebody's life. And they're like, oh, somebody just killed themselves because of this, because they couldn't stop living this lie. And the dad
change his life. He takes the job as the janitor at that mall, which he wouldn't have before.
Still. Still lying to his family, though. I don't know. I guess that just bothered me so much, the like... continuation of the lie, but I guess it makes thematic sense. I don't know. I guess what I'm having trouble reconciling is like the idea that everything seems so straightforward, and I kind of like enjoy the pared downness of the whole movie up to the point where it takes that left turn, and then I'm like, why what is this doing here? Like, I can't... For some reason, I have trouble reconciling that in Kiyoshi Kurosawa's movies. Like, I don't understand why he does that. Like,
so where do you think it takes the left turn?
Well, specifically when the robber shows up.
That's
fairly late in the movie.
Yeah,
I guess.
But yeah, as soon as Koji Yakusho shows up, I was like, wait, what is happening in this movie right now? And at first, I thought it was funny, but then it just kept going, and that whole scene on the beach just made me like really uncomfortable, and I was just like bored with it, and I was like, why is this here? And then the dad gets hit by a truck, and I don't understand why he gets hit by... I was like, wait, what purpose does this serve to the movie? I don't understand what's going on anymore.
Okay.
Well, I thought like the part where he gets hit by a truck has like two possible like ways that you could read it that are interesting. One is that it's the like Verhoevian way that we talked about Starship Troopers, like he dies at that point and everything else is just sort of like, oh, then everyone decided to come home and it was okay-ish, yep. And then we just continue to live our lives like normal. Yep. So that's one way to look at it, is that like he dies and his fantasy is just sort of everything just no one talks about it, and they all go back to being how they used to be, which is like really weirdly deeply sad.
My favorite,
and then the other way to
sorry, I was just about
and
to
the
say
other
that my favorite part about him coming back and everyone getting back to normal was the son looking at him and saying, "Dad, you look strange."
And then the other way to read it is that like cinema demands it in a weird way. Like he gets hit by this truck and he definitely should be dead, but then like he just gets up and goes back because why not? You know, why it's a movie. Why wouldn't that happen? Of course it would happen in a movie. And then everything is okay. And like, I don't know, I found both of those possible interpretations to be pretty sad.
Yeah. I like both of those interpretations.
I guess I could see it, like, I was looking through my notes here and I could see that coming up again, like what you said about cinema demands it, where it's the conversation he's having with the guy as soon as he starts the cleaning job at the mall. He's talking about the different cleaners that they use for different services, and he's like, and this one you could use for everything. And he's like, why don't I just use that for everything? And he's like, no, you can't do it. That's not proper, or something like that. And I was like,
it's not professional. Yeah,
it's not professional. Yeah. I guess that's him. Like, that's the statement he's making. He's like, yeah, why can't I just get up after getting hit by that truck? It's like, because it's not the way movies work.
There are a lot of weird moments that I laughed at really hard in this movie that were really surprising. It's always crazy to me how good Hiroshi Kurosawa is at humor, considering I mostly consider him a horror director. But the part when Tagumi and the robber are like gonna sort of like take off and she like puts the hood down like on purpose, and it's like, all right, let's ride off into the sunset. Like, I laughed so hard putting the hood down, and I was like, I don't even really know why that's so funny, but it's so strange in this moment for her to be like, yeah, let's put the hood down because now we're cool.
I did also laugh at that.
That part's really good.
She stops in the middle of the street too. That was what's funny.
Another part that I laughed really hard at is pretty early in the movie when him and what is his businessman friend's name again? Who's
I think it's Kasuzo.
Kasugo. Yeah, they when they're like killing time so that they can go back home at the right time and not raise suspicion. There's a part where they're sitting in a bookstore and then. Like, he just declares super loudly, they let you stay here as long as you want.
That's super good, yeah.
I don't know if this part was as intended to be funny, but I also laughed really hard when Takashi gets on the bus to go to, like, base camp or whatever, and his mom salutes him as he leaves. On the bus, I was like, that's so weird. Why would anyone do that?
Yeah.
That whole storyline was super sad to me because it seemed like, in a way, Kurosawa actually believed that enlisting, like, society's become so bad in Japan that enlisting in a foreign military is preferable to, like, growing up and actually staying there. It really seems super depressing.
Yeah. Can you, when he writes the letter, that he decided to, he was saying, like, I rewatched that scene, I still didn't really get it. Like, he's saying that he decided that the Americans are not the only ones who are right, and that he would rather stay here and fight with the people. Did he, like, join the Taliban or something? Like, was that
the Iraqi freedom fighters?
I think it was, yeah, I was gonna say, I think he maybe.
Or was he in Iraq?
Yeah, I think that's the implication.
They just say the Middle East.
Yeah. But I guess like he joined a security force or
it's
something.
If it's from 2006 and it's the Middle East, I'm assuming Iraq.
Yeah, no,
or
that
Afghanistan.
Might be true. Yeah. I mean, it was that was just also really weird. Like that came out of nowhere. Also, like, okay, mom, I'm just gonna join the the other.
But that's
army
after
now.
He gets. That's after the after he gets hit by the car, so that could all just be fake.
Yeah.
Right.
Although, in a way, I mean, it would make... I feel like, wasn't there an announcement that they were going to bring all those soldiers back? So maybe the implication is that he joined up with some other outfit because he's like, well, I don't want to go back. Like, if they're going to send everybody back, I want to stay here in the Middle East. So
would definitely fit with your interpretation of what Kurosawa feels about, like... what's preferable to living in Japanese society is basically joining any army anywhere.
Yeah. There's so many sad shots in this movie. Like, there's the part where it's just a giant row of people, like, walking down the street with, like, bags and stuff like that. And I feel like it's just implying that these are all people who've lost their homes recently and they have nowhere to go, and they're just this mass migration of, like, people with bags walking down the street. And I was like... this is pretty brutal.
Yeah, he does that a couple of times. He shows like a big long line of people. Like there's one in the unemployment office too, where he just like pans along the line of people standing on the stairs and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one also. The stairwell of unemployment.
Sure.
Super depressing.
There's also this one part where it's like maybe the second or third day that he's been unemployed, and there's like a group of people like obviously going to work. They're all in their business suits or whatever, and he's like reluctant to join the herd. Because he knows that he's not part of it anymore, and I was like, but do you really want to be part of that, or like would and he's like so lonely that he's not part of it, and he's just kind of like standing outside of them for, and I was like, this hurts.
I love that shot. I thought like it in a way you could say that like, okay, maybe in some other movie it would be like, oh, look, he's free. He's not part of that world anymore. Like, maybe that, to a degree, he's realizing that. But at the same time, he's like, he really still wants to be part of that herd, I guess. Because that's what that's the only kind of thing he knows. So, yeah. It was good.
Well, yeah, I also thought it was weird when he's in the interview and he... can't think of anything that he's like good at, like he can't think of any skills to share to people, and I was like, I guess, like, I don't know, he says something about his interpersonal skills are really good even though he's like the worst.
He kind of like says it desperately too, like he's reaching out towards the guy, he's like, my interpersonal skills are good.
Another bit of really dry humor from Kiyoshi Kurosawa there.
Feel like that's a there's something there about, like, you know, the modern workforce and that they don't do a thing anymore. And it's like, what's your job? And I'm like, I don't even know anymore. I show up and
he says
the thing that they ask me, but I don't know why I'm better for it than anybody else.
He says he's in administrative work, which I guess implies that he's not really doing much except sitting in front of a computer and, like, filling in stuff. And it's really hard to... when you're, I guess, in a really real way, it's hard to show off that as a skill when you don't have a computer in front of you or, like, files to put somewhere. It's like, I don't know how to show
get
this.
Get a fake intern to come in and he'll be like, exactly. Do this thing.
Yeah.
It's a really strange interview.
And
that was my best interview, though, of all time, was I came into a job, and they were like, hey, do your job for an hour, and if you're good at it, we'll hire you. And I was, so they did.
Nice.
That's a good way to interview people.
That's true.
And I had no experience, so I definitely wouldn't have gotten hired if I hadn't been good at it.
Nice.
What was I going to say? I mean, I feel like part of it also is, at least the movie implies, that it's his age, like he's older now and the business world has changed so much since he started being in business that he was kind of just floating on by in this weird interim space until his company fired him, and then now he has no marketable skills because now it's 2006 or 2008 or whatever, and you know, now computers are the thing, and people who can code and program and run IT, and that's so much more of what the white-collar world looks like now, that someone who is 47 or whatever he says he is doesn't have those skills, and the kind of jobs that he had don't exist anymore because they've all been replaced by computers and farmed out.
Yeah, and they also, I think at the beginning, say that they can get like three people from China who will do a job cheaper than one of their people or something like that. So it's about outsourcing as well.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't like managed to get himself into like a weird, some kind of strategic managerial position where he doesn't have to really do much, because people at that age in the corporate world are not supposed to be doing much hands-on. They're supposed to be like telling other people what to do. And he never quite got there. So I guess then when you don't quite get there, you're immediately just useless.
That was one part that I really, really did like in the beginning, is when he comes back from the meeting where he's been essentially fired, and his subordinate comes up to him and it's like, what do you want me to do with this file? And he's like, he doesn't even answer him. He's like, are you using those bags? And he's like, no, you can have them. And then he just starts quietly packing up his stuff, and the intern's just like standing there confused.
Yeah, I feel like they actually did fire him, but in a passive-aggressive way.
Yeah.
Because the boss is like, so what can you do? Like, basically similar to the interview that happens later, is like, we gave your job to someone else, that job you are good at. What else can you do for this company?
Yeah.
Which is really shitty.
Yeah.
It sounds like they offered him to me, that's what I thought, was that they offered him a lesser job, and they...
He was too proud to take
which
it.
Which is basically a firing.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume it was, I don't know, maybe some way to, like, get out of a contract or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is... I guess I didn't fully understand that when I saw it the first time. I was like, wait, I thought they said that... I didn't really understand what they were saying. I thought they were saying that he was going to have to devote more time to the company or something like that, and maybe he was just too
I thought it was
to do that.
Like a
or...
pretty good way of showing how people always fire other people without telling them they're fired, right? Like, you never say you're fired anymore. You say, so
Bless
we have
Donald
this.
Trump.
So
Trump.
This need over here isn't being quite like addressed. So we've like. Added some other resources, and we're restructuring, and we're downsizing, and blah 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 blah. Whatever. You just never tell a person to their face that they've been fired. So I felt like that movie, that was like a perfect way of showing that. They just show like this woman coming out of that office, this young woman coming out of that office, and then him going in there, going out.
She's so peppy.
Just packing his.
I learned Japanese in a couple weeks.
It's what do they call that? Creative termination, I think is the term for that.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. I want to talk about the nightmare a little bit. I don't know if there are more stuff that is a dream as well, but there's one part that's definitely a dream where Takashi comes home and then Megumi wakes up after having an interaction with him that we don't know is a nightmare at first. And... I think it's really interesting and sad and very Kiyoshi Kurosawa that the mom's nightmare isn't he dies in war, but that he comes home and he says, I killed too many people. That phrase is haunting to me.
Was really scary.
Yeah, that was another moment where I was like, wow, the movie just got really dark all of a sudden. Like, it would do that. It would take those, like, hard turns into, like, super dark territory, and I was like, whoa.
I guess I never thought that the movie was not dark to begin with.
Mm.
I felt like the movie was pretty dark from the get-go.
I guess
if anything, that the humor was the part that felt a little more off. But again, I feel like Kiyoshi Kurosawa makes it work, which is why I'm so impressed with him as a director, his ability to blend the darkness with humor.
I guess
all of his movies are funny.
I was just in the wrong headset for this movie, because I was like, okay, it's going to be like a family drama, so there's going to be like some, you know, and then it to start with felt kind of light to me. I was like, okay, it's kind of like goofy, and it's like, oh, he got fired and he's gotta, you know, do all these crazy things to pretend that he's not fired. And then I was like, wait a minute,
a lot of that is the editing. The movie just is really quick on its feet. Like, there's a very little space and breathing time given to the character. Like, it's just like, boom, this happens, and it's like, it feels light because of that, because it's not like you're looking at characters feeling like the weight of the world on their shoulders or whatever. It's like, nope, like, okay, this is then this thing, then this thing. And it's like, and then because you're used to maybe that happening with comedy more, I guess, than with drama, where like every character has to have a shot where they look like they're realizing what has happened to them. Whereas here, it's like, you don't, like, the characters don't really get a lot of that. I mean, they get it in these weird little off-kilter scenes, like the one that Ruben mentioned earlier, where, what's his name? I can always forget it. Ruhei is standing there watching the line of workers going to work, right? And, like, there are these brief moments that they're given, but otherwise, it just, like, goes from one scene to the next. And, like, that can feel strangely light, even though the movie and what's happening in it really isn't.
I also think that Kiyoshi Kurosawa actually thinks that there's something sad about humor. Like, to me, the fact that, like, maybe it's because I've seen some more of his films, but, like, I wasn't surprised at all that Caruso ended up dying. Like, the fact that he was, like, so light and funny to me, if anything, signaled that he wasn't for this world,
right.
In a way. Just speaking of, I really like the part when he's still pretending like he's employed, and he's like at the free food line, and he's like, well, let's just try this to see. And he's like, I wonder what it tastes like. This might be my only chance to eat free food.
Yeah, that's when they first meet or whatever. Yeah. And then
after that, they hang out there a lot.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a weird moment in that scene where he like drops something out of the file folder that he's carrying. I had no idea what it was. He just like picks it up, gives it back to him. He's like, "Oh, thank you," or whatever. And I was just like, "What was that?"
I actually thought, like, I was like, "Is that a piece of the cell phone?" And he's just pretending to talk on it, even though the cell phone battery or something just fell on the ground. But they didn't make it obvious what it was.
Yeah. I felt like the meaning of it was just to show how, like, oh, the guy plays this so well that Ruhei is willing to, like, pick shit up for him because he's so cool and he's, like, obviously so successful. And then it's, like, 1 minute later, oh, so you're unemployed too, huh? Okay.
But you could instantly tell he was unemployed, right? Like, as soon as he picked up the phone, I was like, oh, this guy is a faker.
So many fakers in this movie. I thought it was a fun moment super late in the movie when it turns out his boss at the, like, janitorial service is also a faker. Like, he's getting ready and then the boss comes out of the stall also wearing a suit, and I was like, oh, you thought you were the only one, but everybody's tricking somebody, pretending they're not a janitor. It's very sad.
Yeah, there's also a lot of guys in that line who are wearing suits, too. So,
yeah,
it's a, I guess, a common thing. I don't know.
Common in this world, at least.
Yeah, in the world of this movie. Oh, wait, there's something in my notes here.
Well, I don't know. I feel like if it was, In a weird way, although it was really, really sad, I felt like if this movie was made, I don't know, in Germany at least, or maybe in the US, if some dude had lost his job, there'd be like a lot more like weight added to the individual. Whereas here, it's like, well, Ruhei loses it, but he's shown to be one of so many who have just lost something, that his loss is not really significant, or like added significance, and because he's just one of all these dudes. They've all lost something. Why is he different? Like, it also does not, like, in the way the movie also does not give him, like, does not allow him to be like this jerk in a way maybe European or American movie would do, because that would make him, like, his situation more special, and thus his whatever emotional outbursts would have like more weight behind them, whereas here it's just like, well, I don't know, man, like a lot of people have lost their job. It doesn't like give you the reason to like hit your son or whatever. And that scene, the way, you know, that ends up being played, the scene where he hits Kenji, just shows that like there's no way this movie sees this as anything but like a really awful thing, and him as a real jerk.
I kind of wanted to talk about the robbery scene because I thought it was pretty well done, actually, the first part of it anyway, where he comes into the house. But there was something right before that I wanted to talk about. What was it?
The part before the robbery is when he finds the money in the mall.
Yeah. Bathroom. Oh, no. It's a little bit before that. It was the like news report on the TV. Like, I thought those, I don't know, for some reason those news reports felt really on the nose, where it's like they're only reading the news that's pertinent to them at that point.
I thought that was kind of funny, though.
Yeah, and that's pretty standard for movies. I feel like by doing it even more overtly, he's sort of calling attention to it, because it's pretty standard that someone like will be driving and then they'll turn on the radio and hear the exact thing that they're supposed to hear or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just like this, I don't know.
Happened more in real life.
That's true.
Yeah. It seems like those like really standard movie touches like that, though. Like, I don't know, just confused my sense of movie watching, because I was like, okay, I get it. All right, we're on this path. And then it's like, oh, no, we're going over here now. And I was like, wait a second, what? Wah. Because it was like
I definitely thought that was a joke on the fact that that's what movies do in order to include that type of information.
Yeah, I didn't think that I'm good at getting jokes in movies.
I think Kurosawa is super dry.
I don't know. I had no idea about all this other stuff until we started talking about it. I was like, oh, right, I guess that does make sense.
I mean, put it that way. On this podcast, we have talked about some weird-ass jokes, like, in terms of movie making. If you remember the Barry Lyndon one, or Basil thinking that Paul Sharratt's is funny, and, like, all this stuff is, like, not really obvious jokes, I think.
For me personally, I've watched like 6 or 7 Kiyoshi Kurosawa films now, and it's like as soon as I start watching one of his films, I get into kind of the rhythm of it, and I can sort of, you know, recognize the pockets, and that comes from having seen a lot of his films. I mean, I don't know, like, I just always think of Doppelganger and the hard left turn that movie takes at the end, and how funny it is and how strange.
I was thinking about
and like how that's like a horror movie for like 3/4 of its runtime.
Yeah, I was thinking about Doppelganger.
The part where he's running away from a giant ball.
I was thinking about that while I was watching this movie, and for some reason it made more sense in that movie, because I don't know, horror is kind of an absurd genre to begin with, because it's like all these just weird ass things happening that are supposed to scare you. And in this one, everything seems so like, all right, it's a normal like family drama. I understand everything that's going on here. But then it like takes the absurd turn, and I was like, wait a second, that doesn't really belong in this genre. I don't know, that it confused my like westernized movie watching brain, where I was like, this isn't what's supposed to happen in a family drama. What's going on here?
I like Doppelganger more than the other two movies I'm about to mention, but it's along the same lines as Bright Future and Charisma, which are at times like pretty serious, and then they'll just get really funny, like slapsticky, even like someone like slips and slides down a muddy hill or something for like 5 minutes in the middle of like a shootout or something.
I have not seen those films, so...
I mean, honestly, even the scene where... Even that letter that he writes to his mom, that kind of made me laugh a little bit, because it was just like, man, this is totally not what I expected to happen, and totally, definitely not something she expected to read from her son, which is basically like saying, hey, mom, so remember when I told you I'm going to the army? Now I'm going to this other army, like... Okay.
Join
bye.
The insurgents.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was telling a friend of mine after I watched this that I feel like Kiyoshi Kurosawa is the weirdest, like, major living director. Like, his movies are weird in a way that is really hard for me to put my finger on and, like, really interesting to me, and I like a lot. And I feel like, you know, other movies can be outrageous or kind of crazy, or even, like, Sion Sono, who I like a lot, like, his movies can be pretty outrageous, but I still don't think that they're weird in the same way. I thought that the kind of, like, falling apart was that, in a way, sort of structurally similar to something like Doppelganger, that, like, in order for it to function, this family is falling apart, so the movie has to kind of fall apart too, like that.
Like Snowpiercer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like that.
Call back to my own analysis. Mm-hmm. we started to talk about it, but the part when Megumi and the robber are on the dock and are, like, looking out into the ocean, I thought was a super beautiful shot. And it feels like a very standard Japanese shot. Like, I feel like it's something I see a lot. It's like in Japanese films, it's like one or two people looking off into, like, the distance, like into the future. And it was, yeah, like the fact that it's like Megumi and the stranger, and just like, is that land or a boat? There's something like, that's exactly, like, I feel how Basil does, and that moment exactly captures for me how weird Kiyoshi Kurosawa is, that he takes this, like, standard Japanese moment, and then he makes it so unrecognizable in so many ways.
Yeah, I still have trouble, like, reconciling that whole scene where they go to the sea. Like, I'm like, what does any of this mean? And
I don't know.
No one really knows.
I mean, like, there's the part when he tries to kiss her and then she doesn't want to kiss him. And I thought that that was an interesting, like, element of misrecognition, because obviously when they put the top down, he thinks that they're on an adventure, that it's like a hot, romantic, like, sexy movie adventure. And then he tries to kiss her and she's, like, not interested. And it's like, oh, their ideas of what this means are totally different. And that's really sad.
Right. But then they have sex, or, like, does he rape her?
Sort of.
Like, I don't know.
I think,
like,
that there's just a lot of ambiguity there, yeah, that made me real uncomfortable.
I was like, yeah, that it also made me uncomfortable. I was like, what is this scene doing in this movie? Like,
making you uncomfortable.
Yeah. Is that the whole goal? Is just, I mean, to make me uncomfortable?
Well, it's otherwise, I like it as an antidote to the idea that this is somehow supposed to be romantic. It's definitely not. None of this is really romantic. Like, no. And the worst part is, like, to her, in a way, she would really deserve to get something romantic, you know, like, after all the shit she's been through. And instead, what she gets is this fucking crazy person who's basically kidnapping her, who she still basically tells off because she's awesome. She's like, I want to go to the bathroom.
Why didn't you come back? I promised.
I promised I would. It's like, so she's in control this whole time, weirdly enough. And then that whole scene at the beach happens, which is weird, but it's supposed to be weird. I don't know. Like,
I mean, the only thing that I would say, a similar thing is what I said about the dock scene, which is that I feel like that type of scene where a guy kidnaps a girl and then rapes her and then they, like, fall in love, I've seen in a lot of Japanese movies, actually. Mm-hmm. And then Kiyoshi Kurosawa is just taking that scene and just being like, hey, you know that scene that you enjoy because you don't actually pay any attention to what's going on? I'm gonna not let you enjoy it. I'm gonna make it as hard as possible for you to enjoy this whatsoever. I'm gonna make it not even clear whether he rapes her or whether or not it's consensual sex, because that'll just make it uncomfortable for everybody.
It's true. And even, and regardless of anything, it's not the antidote that you're hoping that it is. Like, there's no escape from where they're at by, like, getting in a fast car and driving away. Like, yeah. Japan's a tiny island. You can only drive for so far.
Yeah.
Although I like the way that when she's out to buy a car, she's first looking at this family van, right? The guy's talking about how you can go camping with it. And then she's like,
"You can bring the whole family."
Bring the whole family.
That sounds terrible.
It's like, I don't want that. And she looks over to this other car. It's only got like two seats in it. And they're like, that's much better.
He's like, this is a popular second car.
Yeah.
It's like, but you need a family car? And she's like,
I like how she says the roof disappears. And that's like.
She says it with such joy. It's like one of the few things that she's enjoyed in the last couple of years of her life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, and that whole scene made me feel good about, well, I mean, like, extra bad about the scene earlier where Takashi's super rude about her getting her driver's license, which is a big deal. Yeah. And he's like, whatever, you're not even going to use it. What a waste of money. And he's just
but
like,
then she does get to use it.
It's true.
And I love every time Kochiyukushu freaks out about her not doing something right. He's like, you forgot to signal. It's like she turns into a one-way street. Right. And like completely removes all of the tension of her being kidnapped. The fact that she's like basically a student driver.
Yeah.
And I also like how his acting just doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie. Like, he's playing a character from a totally different movie than everyone else. He's, yes, like, really intense and doing a lot of crazy facial expressions, and everyone else is really subdued.
I also like the part where he's holding the knife to her. She's like, could you put that away? And he says something, and she's like, I could just crash the car. And he's like, oh, yeah. And so he puts it in the glove box. It's like, yes. Oh, right, you're driving the car.
I thought for just a moment when he was talking about how his business kept failing because he was no good at business, that he and Ryohei were going to start a business together. Ryohei could do business and he would do the locksmithing. And I was like, that would be such a weird ending for this movie. Although the ending that it had was pretty weird, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you two meet? Well, I was going to rob his wife. But they didn't have any cash.
It really grossed me out, all the scenes of watching Ryuhei clean, because he's not wearing gloves. He's just cleaning toilets with no gloves on.
Yeah, I wrote that down in my notes. I was like, this is so gross. So gross.
I mean, I've done janitorial stuff before, and it's not a super great job, but wearing gloves makes it a lot better.
Yes, it does. Every single time.
Yeah, I worked at a kennel.
That's right, you did.
I wore gloves when I worked at a kennel.
Good idea. Good call.
Yeah. That was basically what I was doing in carpet cleaning. Like, we had to clean out our tanks every day.
Yeah.
Definitely had to wear gloves for that.
I don't have a cleaning story, I think. Never. Just clean
too
my
bougie
house. It's true.
Yeah, Takashi was a jerk. Basil mentioned it a little bit. But, like, yeah, that scene where she's like, she so conveys how excited she is about the driver's license. Like, she's like, whoop! And shows it to him. And he's like, oh, you're never going to use it.
And then later, when he wants to sign up for the military, he's just like, sign this thing or I'll get somebody else to sign it. Like,
yeah.
I did not like him.
He's a rude kid.
Terrible at his job that he has.
It felt like a pretty genuine relationship between a kid and his mom, though. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm pretty sure...
He's not even 18 or whatever.
Yeah,
so.
I'm pretty sure I was like that to my mom a lot.
Yeah.
100%
sure. I was
definitely
like that to my grandparents.
I was like do this for me! Or whatever. Something horrible like that. Pretty sure I did that.
I'm sure that it's a true thing, but I like the idea, like, just playing into the larger themes of the movie, that if your parents wouldn't sign you over to the military, that there was some institution that would do it for them. It's like, you don't even really need a family in modern Japan. you just offer up yourself to the military,
yeah,
to these institutions that will just be your new parents.
I really liked her acting in that scene when Takashi tells her that she should divorce, and she's basically saying, like, I mean, being a mom isn't all that bad. Like
she says, and, who else will play the role of mother in the family?
Exactly. Yeah. And like her acting in that moment, like that could scene could be like this typical, like a pretty typical whatever scene, like mom, have you never considered blah blah blah, but the way she plays it is like she doesn't want to like make it seem to him that he's dumb and oh like I've never thought about that or whatever, but she's like acting like she's considering it but also genuinely feels a different way. I don't know, I was really impressed with her throughout the whole movie anyway, but in that scene in particular.
Yeah, the one that stuck out to me the most is when he's getting mad at Takashi, and then she like stares at him and is like, I saw you at that free food line, and just looks at him, and I was like, this is the most intense look I've seen in a movie, maybe ever. I was like, way to go,
yeah.
Megumi.
She's a
badass mom.
Yeah, screw your authority.
Yeah, that was cool.
I also really like the scene where she's been told that Kenji has been stealing his lunch money, and she comes home to confront him about it, and she finds out that he's been taking piano lessons with the lunch money, and like she's still trying to be like angry, but she's like still happy that her son cares about something.
Yes.
Yeah, that scene was sweet. Like, I did write that down.
That was great, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's very telling that we all had different scenes of hers that we really, really liked, because
she was so great.
Really good.
Yeah.
I'll have to look over my 2008 list, but I'm guessing that she would be my best female performance from 2008.
Same here, although I don't have a list, so
yeah.
I'm just going to say it. It's true.
Mm.
I mean my list of movies that I've seen in 2019.
Sure, I gotcha.
My 2008 list is...
I'm gonna Google.
I like that they bring back that teacher... is a big D-bag, because he's the one that tells her or whatever, and then he's like, if anything, Kenji's a bully of me. It doesn't bother me because I'm an adult, but blah, blah, blah. But he's obviously like bringing it up for no reason, and after Kenji gave that really heartfelt apology, so big old D-bag.
Yeah. Actually, it would be that I have Michelle Williams and Wendy and Lucy. It was very hard for me to choose which
one. That was mine
too.
I was looking at it. I was like, oh yeah, that's a tough one. That's a toughie. Michelle Williams
neck
is really
and neck
good in that one.
Yeah, no Kate Winslet in The Reader.
I didn't see that movie.
Kate Winslet in her Nazi movie.
Oh yeah.
I also really like from that year, the woman in Be Kind, Rewind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't remember the actress.
Melanie Diaz.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. From
I think she's a really good actress.
Yes. She's very good.
Yeah, she's...
And I also like Christina Ricci in Speed Racer.
Oh, yeah. Speed Racer was also 2008.
Yep.
Huh.
Good year for movies.
For some movies, yeah.
Sure. I have 3 5-star movies from 2008.
Nice.
So,
let me guess. The Dark Knight is one of them.
Huh?
Indiana Jones.
The other two?
And the Crystal Skull is the other one.
Indiana Jones. Close, though.
And Slumdog Wally. Millionaire.
What? No. It's, Slumdog Millionaire, I gave 4 stars to.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight, Wally, and I just saw it.
Tropic Thunder.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
5-star movies.
Yeah.
2008.
Boom.
For anybody who's not with it, that's a joke. Ruben was telling a joke.
Making a funny.
Really great movie from that year is Taken.
Yep.
I couldn't hear what you were saying. You were breaking up there.
I heard him. He said Taken.
Taken.
Let me look over my Tokyo Sonata notes for a second here. See if there's anything else that I want to say. Oh, we didn't talk about the daughter of the guy who kills himself at all, even though I liked her.
Mm-hmm.
She's only in it briefly.
Yeah, she's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it implied she knew all along that he was unemployed. That was really sad.
And like that she was sad for them instead of for herself. She's like, it must be really hard keeping this all up.
Yeah.
All the pretending. And when she's like coming back to the home or whatever, and she like gives him a look before like he walks away, and then we never see her again. I thought that was a very meaningful look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also didn't talk much about the piano teacher, and I wrote down one of the lines when she's talking about her divorce, and she says really offhandedly, "He was a stranger once, and now we're back to being strangers again." I was like, "That's so sad."
Ilya brought it up before, and I wanted to say then, but we moved on pretty quickly. Was that I liked how unnecessary her divorce was to the film. Like, it didn't add anything narratively to the film. Like, it didn't feel like, or even necessarily thematically, it was just like, hey, this is a character, and we're going to give her a real life, as opposed to, like, she only serves the kid's interest.
Mm. Yeah, it feels like the movie and whatever's happening in it is peripheral to whatever's had going on in her own life. You know, she's got her own life, and this kid is in it, and it's nice, and, you know, she helps him out, but that's not what's mainly going on with her, which I really like. I like when the main story of a movie is something that's only tertiary to what's going on with, like, a character in this movie, because that makes sense.
Yeah, everybody's the star of their own movie.
Something that Margaret taught us.
That's true.
To bring it back to Kenneth Lonergan.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I like this movie more now that I understand more of what it was trying to say, as opposed to as opposed to being like, well, that was the problem I had with it, though. I was like, at a certain point, I was just like, what the fuck is even going on anymore? Like,
that's usually the moment at which I most like a Kiyoshi Kurosawa movie.
See, that's, I find that very,
there's a part in Bright Future, I can't remember why they're robbing this office building, but they're trying to like break in and rob this office building, and so the main character meets with this gang like to help him break in, and they all put on like these light bright helmets or something, like these walkie talkies, and are like jumping up and down and like this alleyway getting to break into this building with like these flashing helmets, and I'm like, this is the opposite of what you want to do if you're going to be breaking into a building. That's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, this movie definitely makes me want to watch like all Kiyoshi Kurosawa stuff ever. Like, I've only watched Cairo, actually. I haven't even watched Doppelganger yet, even though it was on our canon, and I know you all love it.
I love it, and I think Patrick loves it.
What, Doppelganger?
I liked it when I saw it. I really liked it this year.
I really liked it. I liked it the most by far.
I really love that robot. That robot is so funny.
Yeah. I really love Cure, or at least I did the last time I saw it.
Cure is Basil's favorite. Yeah. You should watch that one. Really, Ilya? Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel like that's the one that is all of his themes coherently and sort of like well structuredly.
It's bored.
Nice.
I'm excited. Yeah. There's two movies that I want to see that are on my list of his movies to watch this year. And it's like a actually like diptych or like duo of movies. And they're called Suit Yourself or Shoot Yourself. And they're like these weird Yakuza movies that he made in the middle of the 90s that I'd never even heard of. But once I saw the titles, I'm like, I gotta watch those.
Suit yourself or shoot yourself.
But yeah, I would totally recommend that you watch a couple Kiyoshi Kurosawa, then maybe he can make our canon again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I haven't seen any that I don't like. Even his earliest movie that I've seen, called The Guard from Underground, is like a more standard movie, but it still has a bunch of really weird funny moments that made me laugh pretty hard, so
yeah. I'm really curious about whether I would also like start to understand the humor, or like now that I'm kind of expecting it, if I watch another one of his movies. Yeah. I'm gonna.
Pulse and Cure are definitely his least funny movies that I've seen, though, in Retribution.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Cairo wasn't
charisma
really funny,
is really,
right?
Yeah. There's one or two funny parts in it, but it's certainly not super funny. Like, every time that the guy tries to use the computer, who can't, like, use computers at all, that guy's pretty funny.
Like, how long his pauses are, where he's just like, or he's trying to figure it out, like, he reads something out loud and he's just pondering it.
I also like when the ghost appears on his computer, when he like unplugs everything and he like throws the computer into the air. He's just like, I'm done with this.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't, Kira's been the one that's the longest since I've seen, so I don't remember if there's any funny parts to that. I think no. I think Kira's a deeply unfunny movie.
I think there are still some funny parts, but it's definitely like really more super upsetting than anything.
Is Cure the one where like there's a cop and then there's like a something lower than a cop and the guy's like trying to pretend like he's a cop too and he's upsetting the other guy?
No, like, I don't
okay. Because that part was funny. Maybe that was in Bright Future.
Yeah.
Charisma is really funny though.
Mm.
It's really funny. And I feel like it's actually a parody of Princess Mononoke. Which was like the biggest movie in Japan the year before.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also a movie about all these different groups of people trying to save or destroy this tree.
Okay. That's pretty funny.
And it has
Koji Yakusho in it. Who's he in
all
of his
movies too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, not his early movies, but basically once he started being in them, he's been in all of them, I think.
By the way, Ruben, I just Googled Charisma, Kurosawa, and Mononoke, and your review on Letterboxd is the second result of 147,000. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
I mean, it's such a different movie that I feel like it's possible that people could miss that interpretation, but it's the year after, and they're fighting over a mystical tree. I feel like there's some Mononoke stuff going on there.
Nice.
For sure.
Here's one note that I just saw that I wanted to mention was we only get that one scene with Takashi's friend, but he says he wants to become the prime minister so he can make it so you don't have to wear a helmet when you drive a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Seems like such a small and insignificant goal.
Yeah.
to run for office. And like, so dumb, of course, too. Like, definitely something a 17-year-old would feel. Like, I hate it when they protect my brain from being destroyed.
I just want to live my own life.
I mean, but this was also weird. Like, that shot of them riding on the scooter was, like, really cool. I really liked that shot. It was such a throwaway shot. Like, it doesn't even matter where they're going or that they're on a scooter or whatever. But it just feels like so much of this movie, everyone's just like standing somewhere or like not really getting anywhere. It felt nice to see people actually like going somewhere fast. was like almost cathartic.
So much stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
A bunch of other notes, but you know.
Mm-hmm. we were talking about this off podcast about finding a close up to use for our splash screen on the website because we use close ups of faces for all the movies. And I just thought, I don't think it's a close up, but man, the part when she salutes him, if that's at all close, you should use that.
I'll try and see if I can find that moment again, because I agree, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, find her stare. Like, use her stare.
Yeah. Well, speaking, since we brought up compositions, I mean, I think it's funny that we went this whole podcast without talking about Ozu at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had that in my notes several times. I was like, oh, yeah, Ozu framing. Got it.
And how much everything revolves around eating, and the fact that they're like, that's such a standard idea, is that like people eat and then they communicate, and that's how they like keep a relationship going, and that they're always eating silently. Yeah. And one part that made me laugh really hard, but also in a sad way, is like dinner is served and the dad's like, I'm gonna get a beer, and then they all just sit and wait for him to drink almost the whole beer before they start eating, and then he's like, yeah, okay, and then he starts eating, and then they all start eating too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene was super sad.
Yeah, that's one of those long shots that doesn't really call attention to itself either, because you're so just stuck looking at what's going on. Like, when, why is he so gross when he's drinking that beer? He's like, ah, delicious beer! Yeah.
He's like, tastes good.
So good! Like, men are gross.
We talked mostly about the wife's acting. I did think that the protagonist was pretty good as well. He's a little more over the top, but I feel like it suited the character. Two moments that I really liked is the one where he comes into the house, and I think it's just after Kurosu has killed himself and his wife, and he like stops at the door right next to the wife, and it seems like he's going to tell her, and then he just walks by her. He's like, and then another moment that I really liked with him is when he's reading the letter that Takashi hands him, and like he's looking at the letter and he's just looking at it normally, and then at a certain point his eyes like bug out like really big, like like almost anime style.
I liked his acting too. I like Kenji's acting a lot. The kid, we mentioned him earlier. There were plenty of moments where I felt like his reaction to things was always really like the opposite of what I guess kids' reactions usually are in movies, which is always heightened or screaming or yelling or crying or whatever. He's always seems like it's not like he's trying, like, I don't know where kids are shown to be acting like super adult just like to counteract how they're usually depicted, but it's more like he usually has like his own kind of reaction, which is mostly pretty subdued, and he usually wants to kind of tell someone that they're full of shit, which I really liked. He doesn't really shy away from telling that a lot here.
When you said kids react, I was like, I thought of the YouTube series Kids React. It's like, kids react to Tokyo Sonata.
I'll pitch that to the Fine Brothers the next time I see them.
Okay.
I don't think
you should show this movie to kids.
I've actually been working with the Fine Brothers, so
la-di-da.
I will literally pitch that to them the next time.
Patrick, living that Hollywood life.
Well, I've been working with someone who's been working with the Fine Brothers.
Oh, really? Who's that now?
Rubbing Patrick shoulders Williams. With the celebs. Pretty cool.
I don't have any more notes. Are y'all ready to wrap this up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yep.
This was, pretty good.
Fruitful podcast. Even though there was no fruit in this movie. Just some juice.
Yep. Just that. Oh, the two juices that the kid gets when he runs out and then he comes back and the other kid gets beat up. I forgot about that scene too.
Yeah, the asthma attack scene.
That was awful too.
Ugh. Yeah. What does he say? He says something like grown-ups are the worst, or they only like help themselves or something like that.
Yeah. Which is true for the most part in this movie.
Look out, somebody's going to kill you with a burrito.
Someone's eating a kebab behind you or burrito.
Look out, he's going to stab you with that burrito.
I feel pretty safe.
I see you, burrito guy. See you.
If you are enjoying our podcast, please. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Write a nice review.
Do something.
I don't even know what we would do with that if people did start subscribing to it. I guess try harder. I try pretty hard as is, but I would try even harder if I felt like I was entertaining more than four people.
Oh yeah,
I would edit the shit out of this podcast if I felt like.
No, don't do that. I don't like when podcasts are like that. I like when they have the natural rhythm of the people who are participating in it.
All right, I promise I won't turn this into This American Life or Radio Lab or something.
If anything,
or
add
cereal.
Add more uncomfortable silences.
Yeah, I didn't like cereal anyway.
Previously on Loose Cannons.
You know what I like about rich kids? Nothing.
Okay, so do that, and we will see you next time. Next time we will see you.
All right.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
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 Bye. Good podcast, everybody. I see you, burrito guy. I see you. He can't hear me. Careful. Careful with that burrito, man.